Live.
Blog Talk Radio.
It's the Morning Show.
Okay, you want to rehearse it one time before we go in there?
With award-winning journalist Cheryl Smith.
I'm good. I'm not that good.
Bringing you informative, enlightening, thought-provoking, inspiring, and entertaining talk radio.
Hello. I was just showing you some past issues of the newspaper, part of the iMessenger enterprise. And hello, I am Norma Adams Wade, your host, and you are watching I Was Just Thinking. And I was showing you past issues of the sponsor for this show. The iMessenger Media Enterprise with Texas Metro News and the Garland Journal. Let me tell you about my mask. I wear it, and I'm going to go ahead and take it off and tell you why I had it on. I'll take it off, and then I'll tell you why I had it on. I wear the mask in respect for the health, the still existing health protocol until we absolutely find out what we can do about COVID. But here recently, we know that the airlines have done away with the mask mandate, and some Uber and public transportation services have also. But I'm going to stick with this. And now I usually am in a building with other people, and that's why I respect the protocol, but I'm in a room by myself. So it's okay for me to remove it and put it aside. And then when I go back out in public, I'm determined I'm just going to stick with it. I'm going to stick with it. Now, there's all kind of discussions going on about whether to continue with the mask or whether to do away with the mask. And you can take whatever side you want, but the side I have decided to take is to stick with it and see this thing through. I'm excited today about our guest, and in just a little bit, I will bring our guest in. If you want to call in and make any kind of comment, you can call in on the Blog Talk phone number, and I always give you the number, 646-200-0459. And let me do one thing here, and we will proceed. Okay, got that done and got this done. Just making sure my phone is doing what it's supposed to do. Okay, so let me go ahead and bring in our guest. Oh, hello, hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh,
yes, Norm, I hear you. I hear you fine.
Wonderful, and I can hear you, so that's great news. Let me tell everybody who you are. Everybody, this is Don Payton, a longtime prominent historian and genealogist in the Dallas African-American community and in his own family of Dallas African-American pioneers. Now, I love this. Don Payton generally is known as the unofficial historian of Black Dallas. I love that. And he is president of the African-American Genealogy Interest Group, which is a branch of the Dallas Genealogical Society. He also is a former Dallas County historical commissioner. Now, his family roots run very deep in Dallas African-American history, and his research has helped educate a whole generation, maybe more than one generation, of local African-American families and leaders. I am proud to present to you the unofficial historian of Dallas, Don Payton. Hello, Don Payton. How are you doing?
Hello, Miss Norma Adams Wade. I'm doing fine, hon. Just sitting here, we're working on our family reunion. We're celebrating our 175th year in Dallas, and our about 400 years in America.
Okay.
And so.
Well, I tell you what. Let's come back to that reunion, because I want to spend some time really talking about that. So, but it has slipped up on me that it's planning time for you to get that together. So as we build our way toward talking about that reunion, let me just start by asking you, what on earth got you interested in looking into the history of your family and then moving on to the history of Black Dallas in general? As I've told people, you know all pretty much everything, just everything from that. So what got you started?
You know, I used to like to sit around and listen to old people tell the stories about their growing up.
You and Alex Haley, huh?
Yeah. Well, I got a chance to meet Alex Haley before he published Roots.
He was
in town promoting the autobiography of Malcolm X.
Yeah.
And I casually asked him what he was working on, and he said he had a contract with Reader's Digest to trace his family. He was trying to find this guy named Kunta Kinte. And I says, well, you know, they pay you to do that. And he says, well, yeah. I've got a team of people, and you know, they are all collecting material from all over to write this book. And so,
Matt, what period of time roughly was that? Roughly.
That was 68, 69.
Okay.
And he was influential to another guy who headed up his research team, who actually did the research on Roots, a guy named Jimmy Dent Walker.
Yeah.
Jimmy Walker, his mother was the first Black person to work in the federal library system.
Wow.
So he grew up in the National Library, and so he knew how to pull up tapes and everything that you learn in the library.
Oh, my gosh.
So I got a chance to sit and chat with him, and he was telling me the story about what all they were doing to pull this book together for Alex Haley.
Right.
But, I just always liked the stories, and I was fascinated about how hard our ancestors worked.
Okay.
And so, you know, tracking the kind of work that they did, and having people who were picking cotton.
Right.
Because at one time, you know, 6% of all of the raw cotton picked in the world was in a 150-mile radius of Dallas.
Mm, mm.
And so Dallas was a cotton community, all up Plano, McKinney, all around. So Dallas had the largest inland cotton exchange. Cotton Exchange Building. It was downtown Dallas.
Yeah.
So, again, I was just, I liked those sitting around them old people.
Right.
First thing it did, it kept you out of trouble.
Okay, okay.
And this was, I know it sounds kind of strange, but this was before television.
That does sound strange.
Yeah. Well, people sat around and they talked, they told stories.
Tell me this. Set me within the environment of one of those settings. What you were somewhere in Dallas at somebody's house, I guess, on the porch? Go ahead.
Yeah, we were out at a place called Five Mile.
Okay.
Out in South Oak Cliff.
Uh-huh.
At my grandmother's place. Her grandfather owned, his name was John Miller.
Okay.
And he was the largest black landowner in the southern sector of Dallas.
Okay.
And so it was on there. It was her property. So, they always had a sense of pride.
That place today would be, give me some recognizable intersections or something.
Well, that would have been on Persimmon Road off of Bonneville and Simpson Stewart.
Okay, in that area of Bonneville and Simpson Stewart. Great, 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 great.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, that's 5 miles.
Okay, okay. But anyway, back to your story.
Five mile because it was, I guess, 5 miles from the owner's house. The owner, the guy that owned us, was named William Brown Miller.
Wow.
And his plantation ran from where you cross at Corinth, across the river at Corinth, all the way out to Pleasant Run, Texas, which is Pleasant Run Road now.
Wow.
And yeah, he was one of the wealthiest men in Dallas County and probably the largest single land owner.
Mm.
So, he brought my family to Dallas in 1847.
Mm.
They walked from Independence, Missouri down to at that time it was called Hord's Ridge, H-O-R-D-S.
Mm.
Hord's Ridge. Mr. Hord had one of the very first settlers on this side of the Trinity River.
Mm.
His cabin used to be where the zoo is now.
Okay.
At one time it was the Lions Clinic where people used to go get their polio shots.
Huh.
And there was a little cabin up there. That was Hord's Ridge. Well, in later years, a man named T.L. Marcellus named it Oak Cliff because of the cliffs. If you come up Marcellus, you see those white cliffs.
Yeah.
Right above the zoo, you can see those cliffs. So he named it, Marcellus named it Oak Cliff.
Right.
And, see, it was three separate cities. Dallas was a city. Oak Cliff was a city, and Cedar Springs was a city. So they had a vote to decide on what would be the county seat.
Yeah.
The city would have a county seat in the courthouse.
Uh-huh.
Well, John Neely Bryan gave the land for the post office and several acres, and the people from Oak Cliff, when they came over the boat, somebody had sabotaged the ferry.
Oh, my gosh.
So they couldn't get over to Dallas to vote.
Wow.
And so a guy named Webb was built one of the early churches. He was out in Cedar Springs.
Uh-huh.
It's called Webb's Chapel.
Yeah?
Out in Cedar Springs. And John Cole, there's a street right off of Oakland over there called Cole.
Uh-huh.
Those were the pioneers who settled Cedar Springs.
Wow.
So Dallas ended up winning the election to make downtown Dallas the
county seat.
Yes.
Oh,
and
gosh.
So what happened is that I had this little aunt,
yeah,
Sally, who used to always talk about what she wanted to do to get Papa's place back.
Okay.
And they say, well, Papa's place, oh, Sally, that was so long ago. And she said, the hell with that. What you gonna do about getting this place back?
Oh, gosh.
And then she pigeonholed me and said, well, son, you know you can read, right? You've been to college and everything. What you gonna do?
Oh, gosh.
By getting Papa's place back.
Yeah.
You know, the white folks just took our place, man. We need our place back.
Oh, wow.
And so I went down and started doing some research because the rumor was that one of our grand uncles killed the man.
Mm.
And that they soaked the property, borrowed money on the property from a guy named Bob Simpson. That's what that road out there, that Simpson Stewart Road.
Yeah.
Name for the Simpson family, Bob Simpson and Daniel Simpson.
Mm.
And so I say, well, you know, those people were farmers. They wouldn't get rid of all of that land and everything to save Uncle Walter. They just weren't them kind of people.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And so I went down and found out that it was a lawsuit. Back in, it started it in 03. And they fought for 7+ years against a man named J.A.K. Parks, who went out and staked a claim on Miller's land.
Yeah.
And so they ended up getting 36 acres back, and that's where the park is now, the Miller family park.
Okay.
When we got that land back, and my grandmother's and her sisters sold their portions to the city of Dallas to make it a park.
Okay.
And so I had people who encouraged me to fight to get that land back, and I'm still fighting to get the land back from the early 1900s. And so I was really started focusing on the women in the family, the role that the women had played.
Oh.
Because they talked about how they cooked and cleaned and took care of a family.
Yeah.
A white family. And when the day was over, they'd have to walk back home and start that day all over again.
Yeah.
And cooking and cleaning and taking care of their own family.
Right, right.
And so, you know, I always found that listening to their stories.
Yeah.
Those washerwomen.
Yeah.
Who had to lift those heavy tubs
of
water and wash those clothes when it was freezing cold, put their hands down in that water when it was freezing cold and wringing those clothes out.
Mm.
Hanging them on the clothesline, sometimes it would be so cold that the clothes would freeze.
My goodness.
And they'd have to bring in those clothes, and not only did they have to bring them in, they had to iron them.
Mm.
And that was a skill, and some of the white people had irons with bells on them.
What?
So as long had bells on the iron, so as long as they heard that bell going up and down, they knew that you ironed, and when the bell stopped, they come in and check on you, want to know what's happening, that you didn't stop ironing.
Wow.
You know? And, you know, checking under the tables and stuff for dust, and looking in places where dust was.
Oh, my gosh.
And then praying them games, leaving nickels, dimes, and quarters laying around.
I've heard of those stories, yeah.
Yeah, to see if you'd steal.
Mm.
Now here you are cooking and cleaning and taking care of their family.
Wow.
And they're worrying about whether you're going to steal a nickel or whether you're still a dime.
So So let me jump in. So there you are at grandmother's house, and the elders are telling these stories. What's your earliest memory? What time would you, what roughly what age would you remember that it started clicking, that you started saying, this sounds pretty interesting?
Well, that kind of started with my grandpa.
Okay.
He played in the Negro Baseball League.
Okay.
For the Dallas Black Giants.
Okay.
And he used to tell me the stories about, that was his heyday.
Yeah, okay.
And when the big teams would come to town, Pittsburgh Crawfords and the
Cavs. Where would you be when Grandpa was telling you these stories? Where would you be?
Oh, just sitting there next to him, sitting on the couch next to him, because they didn't have television.
Right.
So, you were interested in, I was.
Right.
Because the rest of the kids, they were out.
But, that's exactly what I wanted to ask you. There you are, listening to the elders tell these stories. And I was just going to say, I imagine the other kids were outside doing something, but there was something distinct about you that attracted you to that history.
Yeah, well, one of the things that really kind of kept me inside about a bit was that my grandmother used to bring them magazines home.
Yeah.
Look magazine and Life magazine, and have one called the Saturday Evening Post.
Yeah.
And bring those magazines home. And I enjoyed reading them. And we didn't know it, but we were teaching ourselves how to read.
Okay.
We would look at things like F-O-R-D, Ford. That's my car. We played like, that's my car. So, no, you got the last car. This is my car. And so ourselves.
How many brothers and sisters of yours or what?
No, these were basically all cousins.
Oh, okay. Okay.
When the guys came home from World War II, I was getting a cousin every 90 days almost. we just look at the ones where they call them baby boomers now.
Right.
But when them guys came home from the war, they started making up for lost time. And I was one of those that made up for lost time.
Okay. Now let me jump from there. Your aunt saying, when we gonna get Papa's land back? When we gonna get the land back? And she pulled you. Go ahead.
Oh yeah, so we talk about it. And they'd always tell me that same story about, about Uncle Walter.
Yeah.
And so, like I say, I went down and looked through the court minutes, the 44th District Court, and didn't have anything in there about that, but they had mentioned in there about the lawsuit that the Millers had.
Okay.
Against J.A.K. Parks.
Okay.
And this went on for years, and so I started collecting that.
Okay.
And then they tell stories about their adventures in the cotton fields. One story I remember in particular, and they tell this story over and over. And they would laugh about it like this was the first time they'd ever heard it. the story was that they were picking cotton over out in a place called Wheatland. It's a
okay.
road out there now called Wheatland Road.
Okay.
And they were out there picking some cotton. And my aunt, well, we called her Mama Lucy.
Uh-huh.
So she told her husband that she was going to stay in. She
okay.
wasn't coming out to She wasn't going to go to work.
Right.
And so the man that owned the place, he came out, he looked around, and he didn't see Mama Lucy. So he asked as Uncle Dempsey says, where's your wife, man?
Yeah.
So he said, she ain't coming. She take me day off. He said, oh, no, not here. On my place, when we go to work, we all go to work. He says, look, man, I can pick 1,000 pounds of cotton a day. I can get a little more. I can get her. Don't worry about her. So he says, oh, no. So he goes up to the house.
Yeah, yeah.
And knocks on the door. She says, who is it? He says, it's me. He says, I come to tell you, you're going to have to get on down here and do some work. Get some of his cotton. She said, well, didn't Dempsey tell you that I wasn't coming to work? He said, yeah, but that don't mean nothing to me. You're going to have to come on out this house. Come on down. So she says, well, let me explain something to you. Say, I'm standing behind this door, and I'm holding an axe. So whatever you put through that door first, I'm chopping off with this axe. So he said, oh, no. So he goes back down to the cotton field.
Right.
And Uncle Dempsey said that he was so glad to see that man come down there off that hill. He said that because he knew without any doubt that if he tried to force his way into that house, that Lucy was going to chop him up.
She meant every word.
He told him, says, well, look, man, says, my best suggestion is that you go on up and get that old crazy woman of yours, and you get the hell away from here. And my grandmother's and her sister, I said, do you think she would hit that man with that? She said, oh, yeah. She was just that kind.
She was that kind.
He kept her word, and if he would have gone in there, because you know what would have happened, see, they would have charged Dempsey with his murder, because he's responsible
for the wife.
For her behavior.
Right. Let me remind the audience of what we're doing. Our audience, we are having a wonderful, wonderful discussion with Don Payton. He is known as the unofficial historian of Black Dallas, and he's got so much Dallas history, African American history. Let me just name some of the names just in pure conversation. He talked about William Brown Miller. He talked about T.L. Marcellus. He talked about John Neely Bryant. He talked about Bob Simpson, related to the Simpson-Stewart role. And this is just in his conversation. I mean, talking off the top of his head, tying in those very memorable historic Anglo names. You got schools named for them. You got streets named for these Anglos. But Don Payton can tie in with those very high-ranking Dallas pioneers, of the African-American pioneers of Dallas, and his family, the Millers, were very, very prominent African-American pioneers in Dallas. So Don Payton, we're talking to him, and he's reminiscing about, he even met Alex Haley, had a conversation with Alex Haley before Alex Haley had published the book Roots, and before the TV series, and Don was kind of inspired by that. So now, I want to ask you, Don Payton, if the general public wants to start some kind of research on their family, like you have done over many years, after sitting on the porch and listening to your elders talk, just like Alex Haley did when he told us in the book Roots, how he used to sit on the porch and listen to his elders talk. But how would the general public, name some maybe first steps if they wake up one morning and say, you know what, I want to find out about my family. How would you suggest they go about that?
Well, the first thing is to sit down and organize yourself.
Okay. Okay.
Start collecting stuff like photographs.
Okay.
School report cards.
Okay.
Those kind of things.
Okay.
Graduations. And with black folks, we've been collecting that kind of stuff for years and years and years, because the number one thing that we collect in our neighborhoods is, I can't go to the funeral, but do what?
Bring me a program.
That's right. Bring me one of them programs.
Oh,
so
my God.
That was a way that we collected family stories.
Yeah.
In every family, you always had a pack rat.
Yeah.
Had somebody who collected rolled up stuff in boxes.
Right.
Of stuff, and they had in a lot of cases they had a room called a whatnot room. To go in and play in that whatnot room.
Right.
We never could figure out what whatnot was. But we were real careful about going into those rooms, and especially when they had that fancy couch.
Had that plastic on that couch,
and your little legs would stink on that plastic.
We've always had
a way of collecting stuff, and for years and years, the black folks had the finest furniture made in America.
Okay.
Because what happened that when the people that they worked for started buying store-bought furniture, they gave all of that old furniture to the help.
Okay.
To the maids and to the cooks and couches and them beds with them cloth feet and stuff on.
We
had those for years and years and years.
We had
all that handmade furniture.
Okay.
That last time furniture.
So that
was a way of collecting our heritage. And another thing is to find out who in the family quilts.
Okay.
Quilting is highly collectible.
Okay.
Some of these quilts sell it as high as $100,000 and up.
Certain
quilts. A story was that they had this quilt is down in a place called G's Bend, Alabama.
G's Bend, Alabama.
And these women have been quilting down there for centuries.
Yeah.
Making quilts. And, you know, that was what everybody in G's Bend did. All the women quilted.
Yeah.
And so this art collector was coming through one time, and he saw all of these beautiful quilts.
Wow.
That these black women were making.
Wow.
And he took the quilts, bought all the quilts he could, took them back to New York, and started framing them.
Oh.
And selling them as pieces of art for thousands and thousands of dollars.
Right.
And so he had a show one time, and he flew all of these women from G's Bend.
Wow.
To opening of their exhibit.
Wow.
Showcasing their quilts. And so everybody, they were talking about how much money these people were spending for these quilts.
Right.
And so some of the people asked the collector, say, do you think that you exploiting these women by buying up their quilts and selling them for these exorbitant prices? And the women say, you shut up. Say, we getting $1,000 a quilt. Hell, we've been burning them quilts to keep the mosquitoes back. So every time we sell a quilt for $1,000 or $1,500,
my God.
So black women have been quilting for years, and people have collected quilts. So if you collect quilts or you have quilts, that's part of your heritage.
Okay.
That's something that can tell your family story, because those scraps that they use are made from dresses that people wore to events.
Uh-huh.
And things. Another thing that people can collect to tell stories, at one time, collecting buttons.
Buttons? Oh, my gosh.
Buttons. Yeah, collecting jars of buttons, because if a black lady got a dress handed down to her and it had buttons on it.
Right.
Man, she was high fashion if she had a dress with buttons.
Oh, my gosh.
Because what would happen is that the women that they worked for would cut off the buttons off of their dresses.
Uh-huh.
And give the dresses to the hip.
Wow.
Because the buttons, they could look at the buttons and it would remind them of all of the places that dress had been.
Oh, wow.
So people collected buttons,
right,
to tell stories about their adventures. So if you had a dress with the original buttons on it, man, you were hot stuff.
So this average person who wants to find out about their family, they can start looking through, like you said,
photos and albums.
and then the quilts and the buttons. Yes.
Photos are very, very important. You know, people run back into burning houses to get their photographs.
Aside from
whenever you hear storms take people out, take neighborhoods and stuff out, you never hear anybody who say, "I lost my silverware," or "I lost my plates and dishes."
Yeah.
They say, "I lost my pictures."
Yeah, and I can relate to that. Yeah, I think about that. When I see the news and hear about it, I think, oh, my gosh, they lost all that family, you know, memorabilia stuff. Yeah, that's sad.
So if you've got pictures,
write on the
backs of them.
Okay.
Who the people are.
Okay.
Where they were.
Okay.
And also, like, just don't look at the picture. Look into the picture.
Okay.
Look at if they're standing by a car.
Uh huh.
What year does the license plate say?
Okay.
So that way you'll be able to date the picture.
Okay.
Also, look at the hands.
Okay.
The people who had them hard, them real hard hands.
Yeah.
The big hands.
Yeah.
That determined what kind of work they did.
Ah.
But the people with the soft, smooth hands.
Right.
They basically did inside work.
Okay.
And so, you know, they were like the cooks and the maids and that kind of stuff.
Right. Babysitters.
Yes.
Okay, now let me ask you this. Okay, when you got inspired to start looking up your family history, and you said you went to the courthouse at one time somewhere in the county. But I want to know, when you found certain things, what would you point to that was the most surprising or the most shocking or the most unbelievable history, family history mainly, that you found? Were there many surprises or many shocking things?
Well, yeah, the biggest one was the 1860 fire.
Okay.
Dallas is the only city in the history of America that was ever burned completely to the ground.
Wow.
In a slave revolt.
Wow.
Because, you know, Dallas was started down where the old red court is, down where Kennedy got killed downtown.
And
in 1860 was a very pivotal year.
Okay.
You had the Lincoln-Douglas debate. going on. They were talking about Lincoln getting to be president and freeing the slaves. You had the abolitionist movement was at its height.
Okay.
You had 1859. You had John Brown had died at Harper's Ferry.
Okay.
To go in and free the slaves.
Okay.
John Brown was a white man who gave his life to free the slaves.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, that was national talk.
Yeah.
He was a white man who actually gave his life
to
free the black folks.
Wow.
And it was so funny. John Brown thought that once he went in to Harper's Ferry.
Yeah.
And that all the slaves would join him. And he went in there with about four black men and some and the other followers, and he was waiting for the slaves to come, and they said, we know, man, we ain't gonna join you. That could, you know, this it ain't so slavery ain't so bad compared to what you want to do.
Oh my God. You know? Oh, my God. Let me jump in and say that kind of reminds me of, and I don't know this to be a fact or not, but when I think about, because now all the talk right now is of Ukraine and Putin, but back when we were all off into Afghanistan, I just constantly wondered why those people didn't do like John Brown tried to get the enslaved people to do. But I never heard about, you know, the Afghanistan people. Maybe they did way back before it became news. But I just always wondered about, and even South Africa, you know, Mandela used to talk about the power that that Africans had, but didn't really use in South Africa. So I wondered about that.
Well, it's a condition.
Uh-huh.
They got a thing called a flea circus.
Okay.
You know the flea circus?
You can take
fleas and put them in a jar.
Okay.
And put a top on the jar.
Yeah.
And these fleas get conditioned
to
the point to where they jump up so high and they keep hitting the jar that eventually they stop jumping.
Yeah.
And you can take the top off of the jar.
Yeah.
The fleas have been conditioned to the point to where they'll never jump out of the jar because they still believe that the top is on the job.
That's so interesting. Now I have heard that theory in relation to, I believe it's elephants, that you could chain one foot of an elephant for so long, and then once you take the chain off, they won't try to go up. That's deep.
Yeah. See, and we were suffering from the, I call it the ENS.
What's that?
Envious Negro Syndrome.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
Well, some people call it crabs in a bucket.
Yeah, I've heard that.
When one person would say, let's run away, then the other one would start to say, well, what are we going to do when we run away?
Miss Moses, Harriet Tubman, you know, she had to deal with that. The folks saying, "What are we gonna do? You know, if we leave here?" Yeah.
Yeah, she said she freed over 1,000 slaves, and said she would have freed thousands more if they would have known that they were slaves.
Oh my gosh! Oh my God! But that's that conditioning you're talking about.
Yeah.
They're never gonna
jump over out of the job because they've been conditioned.
But back to the 1860 fire. So that surprised you. That shocked you.
Oh man, that they had burned the whole town down.
Wow.
And some guy named Junius Peake. They owned a store downtown, Peake Brothers.
Okay.
The street over there named Peake Avenue, named after Peake.
Okay.
And so they burned the town, and they appointed a committee of 51 men to go around to all of the plantations and whip every man, woman, and child.
Wow.
In Dallas.
Wow.
And it was so, I always tell people history repeats itself.
Yeah.
And if you can remember what happened downtown Dallas about 3 years ago.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember?
Wait a minute now.
That guy went up in the building there and killed those five policemen.
Oh, right. Right there by the police station. Right there by the police station.
By El Centro.
Yeah.
Right there by El Centro.
Right.
That was the exact same spot, exact same date, exact same time that they hung the three Negroes who were supposedly responsible for burning the town.
Wow, I did not know that.
Five of them on the exact same spot where that guy killed those.
Oh my God, I did not know that.
Same date, same time.
Wow, that's really something.
Oh, history always repeats itself because the first time we ain't listening.
Yeah.
So I found how my folks were involved in that fire.
Yeah.
And that really kind of like said, oh, now I understand why I got this fire in my bones.
Okay.
And so, you know, that was, and I asked people why that wasn't ever mentioned in our histories, and they say, well, that's not the kind of thing that we want to remember.
Okay, now there's that critical race theory thing back then, you know.
Oh yeah, well, even in growing up, that kind of stuff wasn't in our books, and now they're talking about who they're going to erase out of the books.
Right.
And so, Texas is one of the largest book buyers in the country, the state of Texas.
So
they set the precedent in a lot of places for what books people are going to use.
So when
Texas erases all of our stories out of the books, then we'll grow up and teaching our kids that nothing ever happened, that the only two people that we ever had that did anything was Martin Luther King and probably some musician or some athlete like Michael Jordan.
Right.
And that'll be what we have. So that's why it's so important that we teach our kids.
Yeah.
That we teach our kids how to appreciate the sacrifices that our ancestors made.
Do you think we're doing any of that? Do you think what kind of job are we currently doing in that arena now? How are we doing?
Well, one thing is that really hurts is that the schools don't give out books anymore. Kids don't bring books home.
Yeah.
And when you bring books home, you not only educate yourself, you educate the family.
Yeah.
Because your little brothers and sisters see you reading and writing, and oftentimes they'll pull a chair up and copy you.
Right.
And see, we have this thing now that says, oh, well, we don't need books anymore.
Yeah.
We've got the internet.
Right.
And in my my workshops, I always tell people the man that invented the internet did not get his information from the internet.
Oh, so clear. Oh, that's so clear. I'm going to steal that. I will steal that.
He got his information from a book.
Oh, gosh.
And so when we play down the books and make see that the power of the book, when you start getting ready to eradicate people,
yeah.
First thing you do is burn the books.
Yeah, right.
Burn the books.
Right.
Because we don't want them reading.
Yeah,
we're in a microwavable society.
What you mean by that? What?
Well, to want to know their family history, and they want to touch a button.
Uh-huh.
And all of their family history just pops up.
Oh, this cult, Yeah,
you know, they don't want to do the research.
Mm.
You can do things like visit family cemeteries.
Okay.
Cemeteries tell stories. You organize family reunions. I mean, it's a lot of things because genealogy is not just old brown paper and old census records.
Okay.
The brand new census just came out this month.
Okay.
It's the 1950 census. And I'm on it. I find myself on it at 3 years old.
Right.
So you can go in and pull up the 1950 census.
Okay.
And find yourself and find your parents. And so if...
Yeah, I understand that census is a wealth of information.
Yes. The first census that listed us by name is the 1870 census.
Okay.
You can go in and look at that. Find out what county. You can look at what county you're from.
Okay.
And pull up that 1870 census. This is the first one that listed black folks by name.
Wow.
And then you can look at their ages and where they were born.
Okay.
And that will tell you what year they were born and where they were born.
Okay.
That's a very important census because it was the first one after the Civil War. So they made it a point to try to keep a tab on all of the black folks who were around because they didn't know how we were going to react after freedom came. And so we have... that 1870 census, and then they've got another series of books called the 1867 Voter Index.
Okay.
It tells you the first black men who were allowed to vote.
Oh.
And that's very important because it shows you who in your family was man enough to go and register to vote.
Yeah.
Because it was a backlash
about
black men going to vote. And when you look at the sheet, you can see they went in groups. You can see that they didn't go down there by themselves.
Okay.
To register to vote.
Okay.
They went in a gang.
Okay. Uh-oh. Something happened here. Maybe it'll unfreeze in a minute. You're frozen. I don't know if you can still hear me or not. People, we are talking just fascinating conversation with Don Payton. Let me see if I can, while the screen is frozen, let me see if I can call him and see even if he's aware that the screen has frozen. Okay, let's see if he'll pick up. And it may unfreeze in a minute.
Hello?
Yeah, the screen froze. Is it frozen on your end?
No.
Huh. Well, then the problem is on my end.
You just dropped off.
Okay, can you see me or what? No,
I can only see myself.
Okay, I tell you what, let me get my tech person on the line here and see if she can give us some kind of suggestion on this. Okay. Okay, he said that, he is frozen on my screen. He said that it's okay on his screen, so maybe
yeah,
the...
I can see him, too.
Okay, but he's on my screen, he's frozen, so...
Okay,
the
are
problem,
you frozen?
No, I'm moving, but he is frozen.
Okay,
so
tell him to... log him out and tell him to log back in.
Okay, at the same link and everything.
Yeah, the same link.
Okay.
Just you call him back and tell him to
log out and then log back in.
And then you, Miss Norma,
yes.
you gotta delete him from the call.
Okay.
And then let him call back in.
Okay, so now I'm going to delete him on my screen. I'm going to call him
yeah.
and tell him what to do.
Yeah.
And I'm going to
exit. You're going to put on the little three dots.
Right.
You know, say
mm-hmm.
exit studio.
Okay.
Or
okay.
Whatever it says. I can't remember exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
What it
so
says.
I'm going to do that now.
It says boot him or kick him from the studio, and then tell him to call you back in.
Okay.
I mean, to link back in, and then you let him back in again.
Okay. All right. But you know what? Now my whole stream yard just went away.
That's okay.
Okay. I will have to go back in as well, right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'm going to hang up and
okay.
do that. Okay. Bye.
Yes, no.
Okay, we're both going to have to go out, log out, and then both log back in. So I'm going to log out and you log out, and then we just...
What's that? Need studio?
Yeah, just completely leave the studio and then come back in the way you did originally.
All right.
Okay, bye. Okay, can you hear me? Now let me call my helper. Okay, there we go. Okay, so you can hear me and I can hear you. Okay, now I want to, everybody, let me just bring you up to date. We are, and Don, if it's okay with you, we can, is it okay if we go over some in time?
Yes,
okay,
yes.
So everybody, we are talking with, we had a little technical problem there, but we're talking with Don Payton. That's the name that is so well known around Dallas. He is known as the unofficial historian of Black Dallas. And boy, does he ever live up to that title. He is president of the African American Genealogy Interest Group, which is a branch of the Dallas Genealogical Society. He is a former Dallas County Historical Commissioner. His family roots run very deep in the Dallas African American history, and his family are African American pioneers in Dallas, and they came here with original settlers in Dallas, and he has done all kinds of research, boy. And in our conversation, he's just like a history book. He's just calling off names and events in Dallas that are like reading from a history book. So before we had our technical problems, he was talking to us about African American men being brave enough to go and vote. But at this point, Don, I want to ask you, and I'm trying to work my way to the reunion. I really want to hear about the reunion. But before we do that, tell us, if you will, the story of Miller Moore. Now, I understand that your African American ancestors and the Anglo Miller family have a long connected history. Tell us the story of Miller Moore.
Well, the Miller family came down in 1847.
Okay.
This guy, William Brown Miller, was in Independence, Missouri.
Okay.
And Sam Houston, had set up down in Texas a thing called the Homestead Act.
Uh-huh.
You could come in
and
buy land real cheap.
Okay.
Well, one of Mr. Miller's neighbors in Missouri,
okay,
was a guy named Aaron Overton.
Okay.
Mr. Overton came down before Dallas was settled. He settled out in Oak Cliff. His name was Aaron Overton.
Uh-huh.
And he had told Mr. Miller and some of the other ones about this place called Texas.
Okay.
And so he left Missouri and came to settle in Texas.
Okay.
And then his son followed him. His name was William Perry Overton.
Okay.
There's a road over there in Oak Cliff called Overton Road.
Yes, yes.
And Miller came down and spent some time surveying the land and scouting for the best possible land.
Okay.
So he went back to Missouri and sent his son and three sets of slave men to come down and build a cabin and clear the land.
Okay.
So he come back. So when he came back with his family, he have his house. And so they built the cabin, which is down at Dallas Heritage Village now.
Okay.
Well, we used to call it Old City Park.
Mm-hmm.
And so the family came down, cleared the land, and when the family came in, everything was pretty well prepared.
Right.
He had three sets of slaves. He had John, his wife Lucy, Archie, his wife Charlotte, and Clayton and his wife Betty.
Okay.
So when the family came down, the plantation had pretty well been established.
Okay.
And so they started planting wheat. See, the first crop that they grew in Dallas County was not cotton, it was wheat.
Okay.
And Mr. Overton had, right where you cross the Trinity River Bridge,
uh-huh,
right at the edge of Joppy over there,
uh-huh,
he had what they call a grist mill.
Oh, goodness.
A grist mill is where you brought your wheat and your corn to have it ground up,
right,
and made into flour.
Yeah.
Where you can make bread and cook with. So they turned Overton had a grist mill.
Okay.
So a lot of the early businesses were centered around that grist mill. gristmill because people came from miles around.
Wow.
To have their wheat and corn ground up.
Wow.
And so Mr. Miller thought that the girls had these daughters.
Yeah.
And he thought that the girls should be educated.
Okay.
And the people in Dallas say, educate? Well, girls got to be educated. They ain't gonna do nothing but have babies and be mothers and cook and
stay in the kitchen. But, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Why they gonna need a school? So Miller went around Dallas County and he rounded up all of these girls that wanted education.
Yeah.
And brought them over to Oak Cliff.
Okay.
To the Miller School. He brought in and got a teacher named Miss Gray.
Okay.
And Miss Gray and 12 girls lived up in the attic of the cabin.
Really?
Yeah. And the people in Dallas, oh, man, they had a fit. Mr. Miller was teaching them, along with them girls, learning how to read.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh.
He had them riding horses.
Wow.
Ride the horse instead of side saddle, like proper horse. And the worst thing, he taught them how to dance. So those girls were reading, writing, hunting, and dancing.
Oh, my gosh.
And so that school, Mr. Miller School, morphed into a school called Ursuline Academy.
Okay, okay.
It's one of the few girls' schools, all girls' schools.
Big time. There is some of this big time, high dollar, prominent.
Yeah, well, yes. Yeah, well, these were high dollar kids.
Wow.
Mr. Miller's daughter was one of the first graduates of Ursula.
Wow.
Minnie Miller married a lawyer named Barry Miller from Farmwell, South Carolina.
Okay.
Barry Miller is responsible for women getting the vote in the state of Texas.
Oh, gosh.
The women came to him and told him that they wanted the vote. And he said, well, I'll introduce it as legislator. See, he was supposed to have been elected governor.
Okay.
But he ran on an anti-Klan ticket.
Oh.
The Klan was so strong that they allowed him to get lieutenant governor instead of the governor. And so he told the women that if he got 5,000 signatures, he introduced legislation for women to get the vote.
Wow.
Well, the women came back with 10,000 signatures.
Whoa.
And he said, y'all are going to get the vote.
Wow.
And he had a governor named Governor Culberson, and his wife was talking to Mr. Miller one day and told him she just loved blue bunnies.
Okay.
She thought that blue bunnies were the most beautiful flower. So he passed legislation to get the blue bunnies made into
the state flower. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that's Lieutenant Governor Barry Miller.
Oh, gosh.
Miss Minnie Miller.
Uh-huh.
His wife, when they were spreading the schools out, she was on the school board.
Uh-huh.
And she always wanted to know, what are we going to do for the little colored children?
Oh, goodness.
The little colored children need school.
Right.
So they started a school that's now known as N.W. Harley.
Yes.
It's up off of
A Street.
Yeah. That used to be called, right through there, that used to be called Miller Street.
Okay.
Right, and
that's in the bottom. It's in that area now known as the bottom. Yvonne Ewell School. Yvonne Ewell School. Okay.
Yeah, well, see, the freedmen, when they got freed, and they were celebrating. They started the churches, and the first churches in Oak Cliff started down in the bottom.
Okay.
And that was the Ambrose Tarver, called him Father Tarver. He started church religion called the Church of Christ.
Okay.
So he introduced the Church of Christ.
Okay.
And John Miller, he started the Free Will Baptist.
Okay.
So he brought in the first Baptist church.
Now, wait, now, were these Anglos or African Americans?
No, these black guys.
Okay, okay.
Okay.
These were freedmen. Freedmen. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
And I always like to remind people, when they're writing or collecting, please do not refer to freed slaves. You cannot be a free slave.
Okay. Okay.
You can be free.
Okay.
You can be a slave.
Okay.
But you cannot be a
freed slave. Very good point. Very good point.
So, when Juneteenth came in, they used to have these big Juneteenth festivals. I mean, people came from everywhere. They had parades, N.W. Harley.
Yeah.
And J.W. Ray.
Okay.
And B.F. Darrell. And all of them, they would organize all of the Juneteenth festivities.
Who were they again? J.W. Ray, B.F. Darrell, and who were some of these other people?
N.W. Harley.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
Frederick Chase.
Okay.
Who was an attorney here.
Okay.
His daughter is Frederica Chase, who started the
Frederica Chase Dodd, I think, something like that.
She married Dr. Dodd.
Okay.
She was a Dallas girl.
Okay, okay.
And so, that Juneteenth, it brought freedom. But the number one freedom that we had, Norma, was voting was nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Everything was all right.
Yeah.
But the number one freedom we had was the freedom to juke.
What in the world?
Yes. You couldn't just juke anywhere at any time. You see.
Wait a minute, first you gotta tell us. Wait a minute, you gotta tell us what juke is. What is juke?
Well, in church they call it shot.
Oh, okay.
But when you're out, it's called juking. and they had places where you could go juke. And they
wait a minute. Is that the juke joint? I've heard of juke joint.
Yeah, you could juke.
I've heard of the juke joint. Oh my gosh.
And juking was outlawed.
Oh, gosh.
You couldn't just juke anywhere at any time, you see.
Oh, gosh.
And so a guy named Glass invented a thing called the juke box.
Juke box.
And
oh, my gosh.
And if you put, as long as you put money in it, you could juke.
Oh,
and
my
gosh. As soon as you stop putting money in it, the music stopped.
Oh, my gosh. Wait a minute. Hold on. Now, this is bringing back, and I'm blanking out on the name of the movie, but the movie with Whoopi Goldberg and Danny Glover. Oh, gosh, it was a real classic movie. But there's a scene in that movie. I can't think of the name of it. But it was Whoopi Goldberg, Danny Glover, and it was depicting... It had some kind of link with Africa. But anyway, there's a scene in there where one of the ladies is in this joint, I'll call it. And that had to be a juke joint, that scene in that movie.
Well, see, Glass invented the juke box. And
okay.
At the Chicago World's Fair.
Okay. Hold on, Don. I always like to acknowledge our chat. There is a comment in the chat from Lorenzo Gray. I don't know if you know this person, but it says, "Greetings and thank you very much for your information. Please visit YouTube channel The Plight and Struggle of Black People in America." So this person in the comment was saying that your talk has inspired him to tell people to watch this YouTube channel, The Plight and Struggle of Black People in America. So.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's great. All you got to do is look out your front door.
Okay.
You
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
And we're still dealing with a lot of the same issues.
Yes.
Voting rights. That's one of the hot topics now.
Right, it is. It is.
Try to take away the voting rights.
Right, right.
Shutting down the schools.
Yes.
A lot of the black colleges are struggling because the people who went to the black colleges to get education are not sending their kids.
Here's the comment. Here's the comment in the chat. The movie that I was talking about, according to Tamika Muhammad, and thank you very much, The Color Purple. The
okay.
Color Purple. That was
okay.
The movie. So Tamika Muhammad in the chat reminded us that that was the movie. Thank you so much.
Yes.
Thank you so much. But you're
yeah,
right. So go ahead.
Very, very important.
Yeah.
Because, first of all, it was usually the first place in town to get electricity was, in most cases, the juke joints.
Okay.
You had to have electricity.
Okay.
To operate a jukebox.
Okay.
And when time went dark, sometimes the only light you could find was the juke joint.
Wow!
And juking,
I bet they made that. I bet they made some good money, though. I bet they made good money.
Yeah! You got that jukebox. Put that nickel off in that jukebox.
Oh gosh!
And it was on.
Oh my gosh!
And, you know,
oh my gosh!
And I could just picture somebody coming back and saying, Miss Jones, your daughter is dying there in the middle of the floor, and ooh, she's dying there, Miss Jones, and she is choking.
Oh, my gosh. Oh,
and
my gosh.
She says, ooh, child, don't let my beans stick. Put some water in my beans. That's when you had neighbors who could come in your house. You
okay,
know?
Okay.
And you said, and you could say, I've got to go down there and get that girl. I can't get that girl out of that
the juke joint. Okay, now that's that. Okay, now that reminds me of another movie, Autobiography of Malcolm X, where
yes.
Denzel Washington was playing Malcolm, and they were in this club or something, and they had
yeah,
on those big fat suits. Oh, those
zoot suits,
right. Oh my gosh!
Yeah.
I tell you, we have really got a history. But now let me move. But everybody, let me remind everybody, we are talking with Don Payton. He's known as the unofficial historian of Black Dallas, and boy, does he live up to the title! And so he's just bringing, he's just taking us through just reams and reams and reams of Black history in Dallas. But now I want to move on, so I don't want to forget about the reunion. Now.
Yes.
You wait a minute. Now you told us about Grandmama's house that back down there in 5 miles. Go ahead. Bring us from then to how y'all got to this reunion thing, the family reunion.
Well, we had all of these people, and everybody had started to become interested in their families.
Okay.
And in order for us to share our
uh-huh.
family,
okay,
we have to have reunions.
Okay.
And our reunion
uh-huh.
is the second weekend in July. The weekend is closest to July 10th.
Okay.
Because I was telling you earlier, July 10th, 1860, the slaves burned Dallas.
Okay.
Well, that's why. And if you organize a family reunion, find a date that everybody can relate to. You know, grandma's
okay.
birthday,
okay.
grandpa's
okay.
birthday,
okay.
or some date when something happened.
Okay.
So everybody can remember. You have a story to go along with.
Okay.
Your date.
Okay.
And,
very good.
Just recently, I was reading about this bird.
Uh huh.
Called the Goonie Bird.
Okay.
The Goonie Bird is out in the Pacific Island, called the Goonie Island.
Okay.
The Goonie Bird, the male Goonie Bird, flies off across the ocean every year.
Okay.
And he looks graceful in flight.
Okay.
But when he lands, he rolls over, he falls, he stumbles, and
my goodness.
He lands exactly where he was born, and his mate is there waiting on him. He keeps the same mate for life.
But now, Don, how do you account for that? What explains
everything,
that?
Everything that God made relates to where it comes from. When elephants get ready to die, they don't fall over and die. They go back to a dying ground.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, everything that God made relates to where it came from.
Oh, my gosh.
We are the only ones who are separated. We were purposely separated from where we came from and who we were. They scattered us.
They scattered us like seeds
in the wind.
They
scattered us to where we would never be able to come back together again. Separated children from their parents. Sold us off to keep us from having a common language. Sold us off to keep us from having a common heritage. Our foods a lot of times tell the stories. How we prepare our food. All of the things that they brought from Africa. Our traditions are still there. All we have to do is just pick them up and dust them off.
People have
already shown us the way.
We had
one of the smartest women in America was a woman named Julia Caldwell Frazier.
Okay.
It's a school over in South Dallas. Named for her. She's got a dormitory at Howard.
Okay.
Named for her.
Okay.
She was a brilliant teacher.
Okay.
And, you had, in the 20s, Dallas had a very strong middle class.
Okay, okay.
They had doctors, they had lawyers, teachers. They had Dr. John Anderson. Had a clinic.
Yeah.
Downtown had a hospital.
Okay.
Anderson's clinic. He married a woman named Pearl C. Anderson.
Okay. Okay.
Who at one time gave the most money to the United Way of any single person.
Wow.
Miss Pearl C. Anderson.
Yes. Yes. School and, name for her. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. They shut it down.
Yeah.
It almost gave it away. I think it sold that school for $400,000 or something. White people came and bought it. They're waiting on that gentrification, waiting on the neighborhood to turn over. You had her. You had this lady named Madam Pratt.
Okay.
Madam Pratt taught music, played everything that made music. If it made music, Madam Pratt could play it. Dallas has, like I said, it had a strong black middle class.
Hold on, Don. Let me. I'm gonna jump in when I can with these comments here. Here's another one. This one is from Terry Allen. It says Juke joints gave rent parties. They had paid bills and they got folk out of jail. And Juke joints was a profit maker for the black community. That's a comment in the chat.
Yeah, well, see, you had three people that really controlled the money in the black community. The barbers.
Okay.
It was actually four. The barbers.
Uh-huh.
The undertakers.
Oh, I can see that.
The ministers. And the juke joint owners. they had that disposable money. You could come to them
right
at any given time, and they.
Well, where did we get our liquor? Did we get our liquor at the juke joint? Where did we get our beer and stuff?
Well, the first liquor was homemade.
The stills.
Yeah, that was a shine.
Okay.
And they made a beer. Was called Chock, Chock.
Oh, goodness.
It was Chock beer, that homemade beer. They didn't buy beer. They didn't buy beer from the beer. They made their own had that shine. And even today, you can still buy moonshine. God still cooks shine.
You know what? Wait a minute. I just thought, I wonder if that moonshine name, they must have snuck out at night or something. Where did that moonshine name come from?
Yeah, they cooked it at night.
I never thought about it. I always heard moonshine.
Yeah, they didn't cook in the daytime, cook at night. And they had a black guy was cooking up there in Tennessee.
Yeah.
And he was cooking so well, the white man bought his patent, a guy named Jack Daniels.
Oh, wow. Jack Daniels.
Yeah, and all that bourbon coming out of Kentucky, that was them slaves cooking that Kentucky bourbon.
Oh, wow.
For old guy named Cassius Clay and Henry Clay.
Oh,
they were
gosh.
On top of the bourbon in America.
Oh, my gosh.
They made their moonshine.
But wait a minute. I interrupted you talking about the reunion. I'm just trying. With so much to cover with you, Don Payton, the unofficial historian of Black Dallas. I'm trying to cover all of these points, but I got you off talking about that family reunion.
Well,
so I want to come back to the Miller family reunion. So you were telling us about that.
This is a great time, people. We're working on it right now.
Okay.
And we like to bring people in.
Okay.
And salute their achievements.
Okay.
We just had one young cousin. We called her Daddy Hump, Big Hump from Lancaster.
Okay.
They were the first ones to integrate Lancaster High School up there.
All right.
And his granddaughter just graduated with honors from West Point.
Wow.
And then just the other night, a young cousin called me, and she just graduated from a school in Decatur, Georgia, called Agnes Scott.
Wow. Okay, now let me jump in. Let me remember Agnes Scott. Let me write it down so we can get back to it. Agnes Scott. We're going to come back to that. Okay, but I want to tell our audience that in the chat, we will put the date and I think you said, what is the date again? July 9 and 10. We're going to put that in the chat. July 9 and 10, 2022 is the 100 and what?
175th year.
Okay, this is
175th year in Dallas. Uh-huh. And right at 400 years in America.
Okay, and so this is the Miller family reunion. Okay, now tell us about the site where you hold this. There's a family link to that site where you hold it.
That's the Miller Family Park.
Okay.
That's where my great-great-great-granddaddy's farm was.
Okay, okay.
And my grandmother lived on that land up until 1961. When they sold it, and it's open reunion.
Okay.
And we have people coming from all over, from both coasts.
Wow.
We have people that fly in from Germany.
Wow.
And we have and it's open. It's open and everybody's responsible for their own behavior.
Okay.
And their own food. And so they can come out and bring food out and spread it out on the park.
Okay.
And we got live music, and we roll from Saturday morning until Monday morning, nonstop.
Okay. About what time do you start and end, roughly? Start in the morning and end around when?
Well, we don't really end because we have a permit from the park department to where we can be on the park
Okay.
So people would set up their tents and bring their mobile homes, and we all, you know, because some people party better at night.
Okay.
The later, the better.
Okay, now I understand that there, the city, I'm forgetting, but the city did something official about naming the park or give it city. What does the city do about that?
Well, it used to be called Cedardale Park.
Okay.
And so we went up and petitioned the city and said, we ain't no trees. And, you know, we don't have any connection. That Cedardale has no historical connection.
Right.
That's the Miller's place.
Okay.
So we got a marker, we got a historical marker. They changed the name to Miller Family Park. So our next project now is to change the road. It's on Persimmon Road.
Okay, so is there an exact address or anything or what?
2800 Persimmon Road.
2800 Persimmon Road, audience. That's the location of Miller Park, Miller Family Park. 2800 Persimmon Road.
On the corner of Tracy and Persimmon.
Okay, corner of Persimmon and Tracy. Okay.
Yes.
Corner. 2800 Persimmon at Tracy. Very good.
Yes.
Okay, so we got that. And hopefully.
We do. We salute. We like to salute our veterans. We got a lot of veterans. So,
but you were telling us about Agnes Scott. You were telling us, when I interrupted you were telling us about Agnes Scott.
Agnes Scott is one of the most prestigious schools in the world.
Okay.
A lot of congressmen and senators and all sitting there, people from the royal family, send their daughters to Agnes Scott.
Okay.
And they just really started to, well, it was built by Confederates.
Okay.
And so now they're dealing with getting rid of the Confederate legacy down there. And we just had a young cousin that just graduated a four-year program in 3 years and made straight A's.
Wow.
And so that's the kind of stuff that we like to encourage, because, you know, you never hear about us when we do well. But soon as some foolishness, some criminal happens, here come the helicopters and the red lights. But when we do well, and, you know, we've got a cousin that we like to talk about. He was just named Defensive Player of the Year in the NBA. His name is Marcus Smart.
Okay.
He plays for the Boston Celtics.
Okay.
He grew up there in Lancaster. His grandmother and my daddy are first cousins.
Okay.
Brothers and sisters' kids.
What team did you say again? What team?
Boston Celtics.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's point guard for the Boston Celtics.
Okay.
His name, Defensive Player of the Year.
Okay.
And they say in the publicity, they say he's from Flower Mound, but really he's from Lancaster.
Okay.
And the people from Flower Mound recruited him out of high school, put his mama in a house up there in Flower Mound so he could come up there and lead Flower Mound.
Oh, wow.
Basketball.
Wow.
And of course, Flower Mound takes them.
Okay, now I want to jump to, okay, we got the information about the reunion, and we put that, it is now in the chat, I want you to tell us about, now you are linked with the Dallas Historical Society, the Dallas Public Library, so tell us kind of how that came about.
Well, you know, I grew up in Dallas Public Library system. Used to have this lady named Essie Reed.
Okay.
Miss Reed used to slip me in the library.
Yeah.
It was against the law for black folks to go into the Dallas Public Library through their front door.
Okay.
And Miss Reed used to slip me in either through a side door or just bring me in through the front door.
Right.
And I would read all of the Dallas newspapers.
Wow.
I came close to reading about just about every newspaper in the history of Dallas.
Okay, were you like high school, middle school, or what were you?
Oh, no. I was I started going to the library third grade.
Wow.
Because they used to have this thing called the Bookmobile.
Yeah.
Bookmobile used to come out to our neighborhoods, and I was living in a place called Hamilton Park.
Okay.
And the Bookmobile used to park across the street from me because they knew that I was going to check out the books.
Okay.
And they knew that I was a book lover.
Uh-huh.
So I used to sit and read for hours and hours and hours, just read newspapers, looking at how history repeats itself.
Wow.
And I grew up reading the morning news. My mama used to give me a bowl of cream of wheat.
Uh-huh.
And put the newspaper down on the floor. And I'd eat cream of wheat and look at the newspapers. Because I was telling you earlier that my grandmother used to bring the magazines home.
Right, exactly.
And And we taught ourselves to read by looking at those old magazines.
My.
That she brought home. Well, you know, we played them poverty games. We didn't have no toys, expensive toys. And I used to get them nice toys from my dad used to work at Highland Park.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you about your parents and what they did for a living. So dad go ahead.
Well, he came home from the war, and he went to horology school down in Tyler.
Okay.
And studying the science of watches and clocks and time is called horology.
Horology, that's a new one for me. That's a new one.
So he was a horologist, watch repairman, another name for watch repairman.
Okay.
And then he came back after he finished that. Then he went to, on a GI Bill.
Okay.
He went to Dallas Independent School District, had night school, and he went to landscape school.
Okay.
And he was a professional landscaper, and he laid out the Negro golf course. Where Love Field is now was a 9-hole golf course, was the Negro golf course.
Oh, my gosh.
And they changed the name to Hillier's. Blacks couldn't play on the public courses except on Monday.
Yeah.
And so he laid out the Negro, the grass on the greens on the Negro golf course.
Wow.
And one of his dear friends just passed this year, a guy named Lee Elder, was a professional golfer. First black golfer to win a major tournament. He was a Dallas guy.
Okay.
And so all of them used to come in out to hear you. And then he got on a guy named A. Maceo Smith.
Okay, there's a name.
A. Maceo Smith came in here in the 30s.
Okay.
To enforce any businesses or any organizations that was getting federal money,
okay,
had to do something about black folks. And A. Maceo Smith was responsible for the post office being integrated.
Okay.
The post office and the train station.
Uh-huh.
Because they got federal money. They were government entities.
Okay.
So A. Maceo Smith was a leader.
Now he was employed by the federal government, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. To enforce the new Roosevelt's New Deal rules. To hire black folks.
Okay.
So my folks got on. My dad got on at the post office.
Okay.
And then they had a very serious housing problem.
Okay.
When blacks were coming back from the war.
Okay.
They had been over and they had bought Hitler and they bought Tojo and all
right.
these people.
Right.
And when they came back home, the first thing they did was meet the white people who said, "Yeah, thank you for your help, but now get back in your place."
Wow.
You know where your place is.
We held
your place for you till you got back.
Yeah.
And so basically that everybody was living in North Dallas. Well, they call it Uptown now.
Okay.
But that was a freedman's town. So the bulk of black people lived in North Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
So when they came home, they said, man, we're not going to live in these little shotgun houses.
Right.
They ain't got no lights, no water, no gas, no indoor plumbing. We done went and we done fought. And I done went to school and got my education. I'm going to live where I want to live.
Right, right, right.
And so blacks started moving into South Dallas.
Okay.
And this is going into the early 50s.
Okay.
And so the blacks started moving into South Dallas, and the white people started throwing bombs in the house. Blowing up the houses, knocking on the door, threatening them. So white people say, well, we're going to have to do something because these boys here can shoot pretty straight.
Right, right.
So we don't want nothing happening here that we can't control. So they say, well, got to build them some houses. So they say, well, where can we build them? So they say, some people suggest we'll build them down in the river bottom.
Okay.
And they say, oh, no, man, we're not going to. So they built a few over in a place called the Roosevelt Edition.
Okay.
Over there off of Sucker, down in them river bottoms.
Okay.
And so they say, no, they're not going to go for this, man. They ain't got educated. They know right from wrong.
Uh-huh.
So they say, well, where can we build them? Well, the white folks won't see them and get mad about black folks having new houses. And the black folks can't see them, because if they see black folks with brand new houses, they're going to want some of them.
Wow.
So we came up with a concept to build them out in far North Dallas and build a community called Hamilton Park.
Okay.
Which is the first black suburbia built completely for black folks in America.
In America.
Yes, that was the first place where it wasn't filtered, what they call filtered down housing.
Wow.
And so it served multiple purposes.
But y'all were in that area? Your family was in that area?
Yeah, we were in Oak Cliff living in a shotgun house.
Oh, okay.
And we moved from Oak Cliff to Hamilton Park.
Oh, okay, okay.
So what happened is that the black folks were all kind of handpicked. Hamilton Park was teachers, doctors, and the number one rule was when you build houses for black folks in Hamilton Park, make sure they have one bathroom.
Huh.
Because black folks get uppity when they got two bathrooms. So make sure that however many kids they have, how many people in that house, they have one bathroom.
Oh, God.
And, well, you know, you talk about racism.
Right, right.
And racism is hidden in so many different ways.
So many ways.
And so we had some doctors, like Dr. Williams and a lot of the professionals, they had houses built with two bathrooms.
Oh. And
we admired that. We all thought that was just so cool to have.
Wait, now, who was it? You said it was a physician.
Oh, yeah. Dr. Joseph Williams.
Oh, okay.
His house had two bathrooms.
The Hudsons, were the Hudsons out there or something? The original Hudson, Sam Hudson?
Mr. Hudson, Sam's daddy, he was over the projects.
Okay.
The North Dallas projects.
Okay.
He was the manager for the Roseland Home Project.
Okay.
They were very middle class.
Okay.
Projects where people took great care of them.
Okay.
They were all temporary. That was temporary housing, but some folks temporary ended up being housing for life. You know?
Okay. Now, Hun, I'm going to jump in here because I want to make sure that our audience knows how to reach you, and I think we may already have it in the chat because we're getting close to our closing out time, and I've still got questions for you. But at any rate, let's go ahead at this point and be sure that we tell our audience how they can reach you. And like I said, I think it's in the chat. But you've got you have a website. Let's see. Well, I think the Genealogical Society has a website.
Yeah, the African American Genealogy Interest Group. But I can be reached at Don Payton, 47 at gmail.com.
Don Payton 47 at gmail.com, and we'll put that in the chat. Don, D-O-N-P-A-Y-T-O-N 47, gmail.com. One more time, D-O-N-P-A-Y-T-O-N 47 at gmail.com. Now, do you have a phone number that you want to share or
yes.
What?
I'm at 214-328-2618.
Okay, let me repeat that. 214-328-2618. Let me do it again. Phone number 214-328-2618. Very good. And as we get close to wrapping up, Don, I want to give you a chance in our winding down time to share anything with our audience that we have not touched on that you really want to mention, anything you want to add that we didn't touch on.
Yes. Yeah, we, our genealogy group, we meet the third Saturday of every month. We're doing virtual now. You can download Dallas Genealogical Society. And they'll give you information. And if you are interested in doing your family history, just give me a call.
Okay.
And we're very fortunate. We've got one of the top 10 genealogical libraries in the country.
Wow.
Here in Dallas.
Wow.
And, we paid for that. That's in our library.
Wow.
Our tax money is paid for that.
Wow.
So it's there for our use.
Okay.
And
okay.
So if you're interested in how to get started, if you are interested in tracing your family,
yeah,
we've got a great group of people
mm-hmm.
in our genealogy group who are very good, and some of them have books out now.
Yeah,
and so books are available. But again, the eighth floor of the Dallas Public Library. You've got one of the best genealogical collections in the country.
Wow.
And they got some people down there who are really good.
Okay.
And because I know some of them are good because I trained a few of them.
Okay.
So I know they know their stuff.
Okay.
You know? But, it's because Norma, I don't want to be one of them when I get to the pearly gate.
Wait, hold that point. Don't forget it, because that was one of the things I wanted to ask you. What legacy do you hope that to leave when you get to the pearly gate?
I don't want to be the one, and I don't know who to ask for. You know, I'm standing up there and they say, well, as they say in our community, who are your people? You know, and you say, well, I don't know my people. Well, yeah, we don't know.
Where you come from?
Yeah, where you studied everything, you studied everybody, but you didn't study your own heritage.
Wow.
You know, I tell people when they read the Bible, the very first book in the Bible is Genesis,
yeah.
Genealogy.
Yeah.
Who are you connected to?
Wow.
The last book in the Bible is Revelations. You done went through genealogy. Now it can be revealed.
Oh, gosh.
So we do. We have a responsibility to our children and to our children's children.
Right,
Teach them about who they are and where they come from, and they will develop their own legacies. If we don't do it, Norma, if we don't do it, it won't be done. We are being marginalized out of the American story. We have got to include the sacrifices that our people made.
Wow.
We have to teach our kids that the White House was built with slave labor.
Right.
The Capitol building was built with slave labor. And just recently they have started to expose the fact that George Washington had black children. And they just, NPR just had a big story on this young man who's found out that he's connected to George Washington.
And he found this out through his research, his own, is that true?
People look. So, you know, and it is very special now to go to family reunion and to know connecting with people, because we can't afford to go into another generation of kids not being connected to anybody. I've connected people with their dads who never knew their dads. Who never knew anything about their family. And once they start that, they find out that we are all connected. We are all the same family. We're all the same people. It's just that when you go off and disconnect yourself, that you end up living in the land of the lost.
Let me ask you this. In a few little waning moments, has there been on your journey anything that has been just frustrating to you or extremely difficult? When you think of your journey, what has been frustrating? What has been difficult for you?
Well, I had walls, Norma, but I took them walls and turned them sideways and made them into bridges.
Okay. I love it.
But once you get into genealogy, the God spirit starts to move and put people in your path. People that have stories. People who have photographs. I've had several calls. People call me and say, man, come over here and get all of these pictures. These pictures are dead people. Come get these pictures. And I didn't know these people were even in the world. And some kind of way they heard about me, or they read over the years the columns that you have done.
Right.
The stories that you've done for our family. I've had people to say they read Norma's column. They read about you in the Dallas Morning News. As strange as it seems, I had a cousin who has spoke of his life in prison.
And he
read a story that you did on our family reunion. And he came home and he says, cuz, say, I read about the reunion. And everybody was there except me. And I'm never going to go back to that place ever again.
Oh, my gosh, Don.
Well, see, that's the power of that print, no? That's the power of that printed word. You know, people used to tell you, you argue with black and white. That's the truth. I saw that in the paper. That's the truth. And I have to explain to them that the newspaper's job is to sell advertising.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Everything else is filler.
we fill it in with a little truth here and there.
Yes.
Sometimes we get it right.
And the role of the black press is most important.
The
role of the black newspaper, because it was a place when we got journalism degrees.
Yeah.
Writing degree.
Right.
The white newspaper was hiring us.
Yeah.
And the black newspaper was the only place that, and we had black newspapers all over America. It used to be against the law to have black newspapers. The reporters used to throw them off the trains in the woods so people could go and get read a newspaper.
Right.
They said that it encouraged black folks to run away.
Yeah.
When they would get newspapers like the Chicago Defender.
Yeah.
And the Kansas City Call, you know, they look at that paper and say, that's Jackie Wilson. Man, I know Jackie when he didn't have a dime.
Oh, my God.
On the front page of the Chicago Defender.
Front page. Yeah. Oh, my
above,
God.
Above the fold.
Well, listen, Don, we're going to wrap it up. We will just have to have you back. That's all. I have just thoroughly been delighted with our conversation. We could go on. I could go on listening.
What's going on in the chat?
Well, let's see. Well, the most recent has been we've put all the information in. And here's one real quick question, but we've just got about a minute. We've got all your information about the reunion and how to reach you, but here's one. Why are black family reunions so important in the black community? And with that, that'll be our closing statement.
Because it's about unity, about coming together, and it doesn't have to be a lot of people. Anywhere, if you can get five people to come together.
Okay.
Y'all just have a family reunion with five, or if you have a family reunion with 500.
And it probably will grow, won't it, Don? If you start with that five, won't it maybe grow?
Yes. All you got to do is have a good time and have plenty of chicken and hot water cornbread and greens.
What about the yams? Don't forget those yams now. Don't forget.
Well, the yams made in potato pies.
Okay.
And you get together, you share stories, you share food, and you make the God spirit and the ancestor spirit smile.
Oh, Doug, thank you. Goodbye. We will have you again. Bye now.
Bye-bye
now. Okay. Oh, my gosh. Don Payton, the unofficial historian of Black Dallas. Oh, wow. What a delight. So as we have about our last couple of minutes, we want to hear Teddy Pendergrass tell us to wake up. We want Teddy to tell us to wake up. And that's what Don Payton was telling us. Wake up, everybody. And Teddy Pendergrass with the Harry Melvin and the Blue Notes, they got the message. They got the message. What we got to do. No more sleeping in bed. We don't own the rights to this song, but it tells us no more sleeping in bed. No more backwards thinking. There's time to think ahead. No more back thinking, time for thinking ahead. World has changed so very much from what it used to be. So much poverty, war. He wants to tell the teachers to wake up and teach a new way. The sin that we got to make the kids listen. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. But they're the ones who are coming up in the world. It's in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. And why do we have to do that? Why, Teddy? Because the world won't get any better if we just let it be, close our eyes, pull the shades down, look the other way. No, the world won't get any better. We've got to change. Just you and me. Just you and me. Just you and me. Go on, Teddy, take us out.
Old people well. They're the ones who suffer.
They're the ones
catch all the hair. They don't. have so very long before that judgment day. So won't you make them happy before they pass away? Wake up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we could do it if we all lend a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our mind. Surely things will work out, they do it every time.